Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Demand Gen Summit track. I'm Erica Goldwater. I'm pleased to be hosting you for this track. I'll be here throughout the 2 days in this room. So anytime you're looking for the Demand Gen Summit track, it's going to be in here in this room, and I will be here. So I'm pleased today to welcome Kathleen Schwab from IDC. She's the Vice President of IDC's CMO Advisory Board Services, and she'll be speaking today about some of the research that they've done, and demand generation is much more than the funnel, as you know, so she's going to be talking about how to blow up the funnel. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks everyone for coming here today. I'm really excited to talk with you about something that's really intriguing us at the moment. I know I've been in B2B marketing for my entire career, actually in the tech industry for just about all my career. And in the tech industry, we have a saying, any company that's set up for success in the 20th century is going to fail in the 21st century. And the reason why that is true is because of the digital disruption. The digital disruption changes just about everything having to do with a business process. And that includes the sales funnel. You see, the sales funnel is a business process that was set up ideally for the 20th century. A situation where there was very little information that was exchanged and available between buyers and sellers. But today, because we live in a high information society with very, very different conditions, we find that the funnel has less applicability than it has before. And so what we're finding is that advanced companies are starting to move away from the 20th century funnel and experiment with some new things that seem to work better under today's condition. So to understand exactly why that might be true, I think it's useful to talk about how the funnel got its shape in the beginning. It seems so ordinary and so ubiquitous today that it's hard to imagine that it could be any other way. And yet the funnel today hides some problems for today's situation. The funnel actually started before the 20th century. The first funnel was introduced in 1898. But it really started to become popular in the 1930s. In the 1930s was when sales went from being kind of an individual, you know, maybe you're good, maybe you're not, ad hoc thing, to a real profession. This happened because three great ideas came together at the same time. Thomas Watson, who was the founder of IBM, invented the first trainable sales methodology. There was a bestseller called The Psychology of Selling by E.K. Strong that really took off. And Gail Carnegie, who was the Tony Robbins of his time, went around the world teaching people how to win friends and influence people. So when those three things came together and sales became really a profession, the funnel became the heartbeat of this new era. And it was very, very narrow, though, because it was pretty much only sales at that time. And although there was a nice exchange of information between buyers and sellers, a real rich engagement that happened all along the process, salespeople are only people. And so they really were bound by time and geography. So companies were searching for a more effective and efficient way to build demand. Starting at about the 1950s and really accelerating through the next couple of decades became the professionalization of direct marketing. Now, marketing, of course, just like sales, has been around probably forever, but it wasn't until the 70s when direct response marketing met the burgeoning new state of databases that marketing really started to take over the top of the funnel. And of course, the top of the funnel just exploded because now marketers were professional, they were starting to measure, segment, use conversion rates. You know, there's a whole bunch of new things that happened at the top of the funnel. So the top of the funnel got super efficient. But at the same time, there was something that was lost, because in this one-to-many conversation that marketing started with customers, you lost that kind of give and take of information that happens between sellers and buyers. So it wasn't that great for buyers. They really didn't gain a whole lot in this. In fact, arguably, they lost a little bit because they lost some of the interpersonal relevancy, and they started getting a lot of telemarketing and junk mail and things. But then in the 1990s and then the 2000s, there came an information tool. I think you all know what I'm talking about, the internet, which really, if I can change it, which really empowered individuals and changed the shape of the funnel to what we pretty much have right now. So everybody knows that the internet made buyers self-sufficient, more self-sufficient. They get to find out what's going on a lot faster. And no matter what part of the business that you're in, I think you would agree that sales has a much smaller part of the conversation. Whether it's 20% or 100% in the case of e-commerce, sales is just involved in less of the conversation. And so the part that marketing manages has come way, way down, much deeper. And of course, then it narrows out again when you get to the time and geography constraints of sales after all. So this was a big boon for customers. Not quite sure whether or not it was a great gain for brands. Whoops, sorry. Sorry, I'm having struggling with this. There we go. So if we take a look at where the funnel is today in this high information era, this is kind of what we find ourselves in. So the top of the funnel is wider than it has ever been. And because most companies still don't know a whole lot about the companies that they bring into the top of the funnel, we have to go as wide as we possibly can because there's such low conversion rates overall. The funnel involves a very, very large amount of filtering because most of the people that come into the top of the funnel are not really appropriate for a bunch of different reasons. So we're very focused on trying to get them either down or out. And of course, that makes just this unidirectional flow for the most part in the funnel. Most marketers are mostly concerned with, can I get this lead to sales or quickly get them out of the funnel? And then there's this choke point that always happens between where this marketing silo and the sales silo collide. So the MQL is really the edge of those two silos colliding. And even if you've done a great job on alignment, you still have the bickering that goes on between marketing and sales. Sales still doesn't follow up on the majority of marketing's leads. They cherry pick and only pick the ones that they want. And then of course, because you're still getting to that point where you have a time and geography constrained sales force, you still have a very tiny bottom relative to the top. So the big difference between the top and the bottom represents a big waste for marketing. Always have a lot of debate over the ROI for marketing, and this is part of the reason why. There is a lot of waste. Salespeople still find it super frustrating. So it's not only partially a waste for marketing and frustrating for sales, but customers also really don't like it. They love the internet, but they hate the funnel. And you can see here, IDC went out, and look, this comes from tech buyers. We do an IT buyer experience study every year. And here we asked buyers whether or not they were willing to switch, how willing were they ready to switch, even if they really liked the product, if they didn't like marketing and sales. And look at that. The millennial buyers are almost 70% of them are willing to switch if they don't like the way they're managed during the marketing and sales process. And you can see that trend increasing through the generations. So it's one thing if marketing finds it a waste or if sales doesn't like it, but it's another thing if buyers don't like it because that's an existential threat. Now, the funnel has become such a part. I mean, we've had this now for almost a century, and it's become such an important part of the way that we think about demand that it's very difficult to think that it could be any other way. This model is truly what you might call a paradigm. Hate to use the repeated words here, but a paradigm is something that constrains your thinking in ways that you don't even realize. So what I have seen in my most advanced clients and in talking to a lot of the marketing technology companies that I work with on a regular basis is that the most advanced companies are now starting to look at different ways to approach demand. They're asking for a new playbook. And they're not just making incremental improvements at different stages of the funnel. They're actually looking at new, completely different ways of doing things. And that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about right now. So these groups, and as you go through today and tomorrow and you listen to a lot of the best practices that you're going to hear, what I would encourage you to do is to listen for some of the clues of the things that I'm going to be talking about here. Because in those best practices, you're going to hear the pops of different parts of the funnel being blown up. Okay, well, this was a buyer's journey. This is IDC's buyer's journey. One of the things that is the key, one of the critical pivots that we see as we move from the funnel to the new way of doing things, switch between a company-centric view, which the funnel is a business process, it's a company-centric view, to a customer-centric view, which is the buyer's journey. And what IDC has found is that in the tech companies that we surveyed, those companies that have made a switch or are in the process of making a switch to a buyer's journey view instead of a funnel, pure funnel view, is that they get 38% more of the marketing and sales budget. So a company that pays $100, how do you divide it between marketing and sales? The marketing people get 38% more than those companies that are just using a funnel. Now, I can't really say that one causes the other, but they're correlated together, but we still view this as a really positive thing. Now, some people ask me, well, what's the difference between a funnel and a buyer's journey? And I can see where that would be a challenge because they both have stages. But let me give you a thought experiment to kind of help you illustrate the difference. Let's say in your mailbox, you get a flyer from the local Honda dealership. Now, you personally could be in any stage of your buyer's journey. You could be at the beginning, you know, maybe your car's getting a little old, or you just had a baby, and you're thinking, maybe I should get a new car. You could be farther in. You could be actively looking for some alternatives. You could be right at the end. You could be eager to buy today. Or maybe you bought, you know, a few months ago, and you're not in the market at all. So you can be at any point in your buyer's journey. But you are only one place in the funnel, which is at the top, because you received this flyer. So while there are linkages between the two, they really are a different perspective. So now what I want to do is I want to share with you four strategies that blow up the funnel. And again, as you go through the conference today and tomorrow, listen for cues about how these different strategies blow up the funnel. So let me go through them really quickly, and then I'll give you more information. Account-based marketing, I think a lot of you know what that is. Instead of going wide, you're going narrow, and you're going narrow around a specific set of accounts. You're developing custom programs around those accounts, custom campaigns, and you're also having sales and marketing work in lockstep together. Concierge selling, probably a term you haven't heard before, but what this is basically the next generation of what might be inside sales or an SDR, but it's not the me and my quota people, all right? It's not people who are, you know, churn and burn on the phone. These are more like the Apple Genius Bar. And the reason why we put it in as a marketing strategy is that these folks are really a true hybrid between digital marketing and a human being who actually is helping. Think of them as sort of like air traffic controllers, but instead of taking an airline through to a safe landing, they're using things like social and artificial intelligence and predictive analytics and pitch-perfect content that's delivered via systems to usher a buyer through their journey. Analytics-driven engagement. Again, something I think most of you are probably deep into having analytics be a part of what your demand structure is about. But I'm talking about the next generation. I'm talking about cognitive. I'm talking about predictive to create high propensity segments at the top so that, again, you're narrowing down and using behavioral monitoring for nurturing. So it's sort of the next generation of where analytics is going. And then loyalty first marketing. Again, something you probably haven't heard of before, but it's something that's moving over from the consumer world. A lot of the top consumer brands are starting to create communities that build fans and then monetize that fan base. In this case, there's no leads at all. The community sells for you. Now, all of these four strategies borrow something from the past. There's very little in this world that's really invented new. But instead of being very rules-based and very linear and very conversion-oriented, they start to borrow techniques that come from adaptive environments. Things like first responders, aviation, gaming, software development, surgery, very chaotic environments that anything can happen. And the reality of the buyer's journey is that it's much more like a gaming environment than it is like a funnel. So some of the things that we learn from adaptive environments is that the processes in adaptive environments have these things in common. They have a shared mission. You don't have marketing looking at one thing and sales looking at another one. Everyone has the same mission. Orchestrated collaboration. You're going to hear a lot about orchestration and about collaboration. When you have a complex environment that you need to work with, you need to have specialists. You need people who are good at social. You need people who are good at content. You need people who are good at actually selling. But instead of working in separate silos, they actually integrate their business processes in a way that they're working side by side as partners. User-centric focus. Talked about this before, about being user-centric. It's the buyer's journey, not yours. And high information. Data, 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 data. Insights, 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 insights. You cannot be adaptive if you do not have a really, really strong feedback mechanism all the way through the interaction process. And when you have feedback and really active feedback, getting close to real-time feedback, then you can start providing guided incremental process nudges. So somewhere in between the random, you know, we do whatever we want to kind of thing and a real dictated script is this idea that you have people, first responder type people that are working directly with customers, whether it's salespeople, field marketing people, campaign managers, et cetera, and they're being fed real-time incremental information that they can then get feedback on and adjust as needed. So now what I want to do is take you through the four strategies. There's so much that could be said about them, and clearly you're going to get a lot of information at some of the other sessions, specifically on the account-based marketing, which has gotten so popular. But what I want to do is talk to you a little bit about when you might think about using these various strategies. So account-based marketing, if you remember It's something that you, you know, campaigns and processes that you would develop around a specific account and very, you know, customized. I think that account-based marketing, as a technology and as some of the developments continue to get better and better, you're going to be able to use account-based marketing in many, many more circumstances. But today, there's a real high overhead for account-based marketing. It takes a lot of work and, frankly, a lot of money to do account-based marketing. It is the most effective strategy, 21st century strategy, though, for situations if you have a very expensive, very complex product that you sell to a relatively small number of accounts, and if you have a sales model which is also account-based. So one of the things that you'll see here is that it's very important to match the marketing with the sales. This is where some of the mismatch has come from in the past, is that sometimes companies try to do sort of a demand gen, you know, lead generation type of thing, but their accounts are organized in an account model. So this is the situation. If you have a situation in your company where you have these kinds of accounts and these kinds of a situation, I strongly encourage you to go to ABM. But if you are working with more mid-size accounts and have to scale, or if you have a lot of partners that you're working with, you might think about going more towards the concierge selling. Now, the reason why we have this little race car here is that the concierge salesperson is like the driver of the car, and everybody else is the pit crew. So marketing becomes the pit crew for the salesperson. And we think that this is going to be one of the most well-used models in the next 5 years. This is truly where inside sales is going. It's very, very well suited for situations where you have kind of a medium kind of situation, and you've already got inside sales or territory-based, and I would say add also channel partners in that realm. The advanced analytics engagement, again, sort of it's like the current demand strategy, but kind of on steroids. As the technologies like artificial intelligence and cognitive better, it allows you to do more and more digital. Instead of having the one-to-many, one-way kind of conversation that is so typical today, with some of these new strategies, you can actually get much closer to the one-to-one. In some regards, you're almost getting back to the situation where you had that real narrow funnel, only now your funnel is much wider, because you can bring together that rich information engagement that came about when salespeople were doing all the work, but now you can do this more digitally. Again, your sales model for this is one if you have inside sales, territory sales where you have to feed a lot of mouths, or going all the way to e-commerce. One of the coolest examples that I have seen was with an advanced analytics company that I work with, and what they used this for was they used a predictive analytics to identify behaviors of high propensity types of customers. And what they found was that one of the buying patterns, or one element of the buying pattern, was people who were trying to get to service information. Now, usually in marketing, we don't think about services as an important part of buying of content, but they have found that it, along with some of the other relative content that they have. Then what they did is have their launch a campaign, but not to the individual who's visiting the website, but rather to other people in the company, because, of course, in B2B, no one ever buys alone. Loyalty-first marketing is something that can actually be used in any kind of a situation. I think we're still going to need a little bit of development on this, but we do see it starting to happen in a couple of different areas. I'll give you a consumer example, Red Bull. So Red Bull has their segment as anybody who is passionate about extreme sports. But what they've done is they've built a community around the idea of extreme sports, and then they monetize that fan base. So we think of them as the energy drink, but that's actually not the biggest part of their revenue. They actually make a lot of their revenue through events, merchandise, and other things. So typically in B2B, we think we make products and then we sell them. When you start moving to loyalty first, as we get to more of a services and experience economy, it allows you to build these community bases and then be able to think of new products and services that your customers are going to love. Some of the places where it's starting to come in, open source is an area where that's happening. Some of the SaaS cloud models, mobile apps, those are some of the areas where we're starting to see this model creep in, and I think it will expand over time. So you may be at different points. Maybe you're starting to use some of these techniques in your own demand world today. Or maybe you're just at the beginnings and you're starting to think about, well, how could I use this stuff? First off, if you are at the very beginning, I would encourage you to continue to use some of the aspects of the funnel in the sense that you need to be able to measure, you need to have agreement with sales about what makes a good lead and things like that. But if you are ready to go on to some of the next steps, or if you want to kind of jumpstart some of these more adaptive strategies, here's a couple of things I would recommend. First off, these strategies require modern marketing competencies across the board. These are IDC's 5 modern marketing competencies. So it's not whether you're going to invest in content marketing or account-based marketing. Account-based marketing requires that you be good at content marketing, but you're going to do it in a particular way to accommodate the strategy of account-based marketing. And the same thing goes for concierge selling and analytics and loyalty first. You need to be good at all of these. So what you should do when you go back to your office is you should look at the efforts that you're doing in things like sales and channel enablement or that you're doing in customer intelligence and make sure they're steered to be matching with the strategy that you think is best for you. So it shouldn't be an either or with content marketing being over here in its own silo and demand being over here. You need to work together in this sort of cross-functional way. Another thing that you need to start doing is breaking down the silos. It's bad enough that marketing and sales are in 2 silos, but it's really bad for marketing to be in its own silos. And that's the way we've been organized for decades, because that was the way of the 20th century. We're the advertising group, we're the events group, we're the demand group. Some of the things that we have seen really successful at starting to help people break down these silos, one is creating the connective infrastructure, having common content, common data, starting to link your channels together. It's very interesting to see how once you start to make people use these common resources, how much it really brings people together. Another thing that we've seen are things like tiger teams, where you have people from different specialties come in to work together on a particular thing. Again, if you're going to be using something like trying to put concierge selling in for your inside salespeople, having a content specialist and a social specialist and an ad specialist coming on board to a program to try to figure out how are we going to make this person super successful. And finally, because always B2B, with just a few exceptions that might go to e-commerce, is never going to be totally digital. If you're selling a complex product into a complex environment, which is particularly that complex environment is one of the hallmarks of B2B, you're never going to get to the point where digital is going to be completely enough. Just like at Home Depot, you're always going to need a person in the orange apron to come and help the majority of customers. So you have to form an alliance with sales that goes well, well beyond the kind of alignment that probably most of you have been working on so far. If we go back to those, what we learned from adaptive environments, here are some hints about what you might be able to do with sales. having a shared mission. If marketing has a goal of giving leads and sales has a goal of getting revenue, you're not working on the same songbook. Have one set of goals, particularly at the top, but kind of meshing down towards the bottom. Revenue and customer experience. Orchestrate collaboration. That means being able to take pieces of your processes and mesh them. I've seen some really cool things happen when you start thinking about mini journeys, like a mini journey that happens right after you have a demo, where marketing and sales and customer success all come together to try to get the company to the next level. User-centric focus, we've talked about that a lot. One of the main things here is there is only one customer. Marketing is not a servant of sales. There's only one customer, and it's the customer. High information, talked a lot about that. But one of the important things is a lot of you think that you're passing information to sales, but if you're doing a dump of data from your marketing automation platform into your CRM, that's not what sales needs. They need insight-level information. And then finally, the guided incremental process. I think you'll see if you go out into the marketplace, you're going to see a lot of cool products that are starting to help marketing to provide guidance specifically to sales, as opposed to that completely leaving them alone and only giving them a raw dump. So the funnel was an excellent, excellent business process for the 20th century, for the time when buyers and sellers knew very little about each other. But now that we have a lot of information and buyers have so much power and we have such better tools, there are better, much more effective ways, and the leading companies are starting to move in this direction. So you're going to have just so many resources over the next couple days to learn and listen for cues about this, these new particular ways. And I would encourage you to examine them. Think about the way that you're doing demand today and see if you can take that opportunity to blow up your own funnel and move much more positively into the 21st century. Thank you very much for your time. I'll be here for the next couple of days, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.